This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
This is Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman. When Seattle-based researcher and writer Sharon H. Chang wrote an essay that detailed why she tells her mixed-race son that he's Asian and not white, many readers were surprised that she would deny him his whiteness. These reactions led Sharon, who herself is mixed-race, to write a follow-up essay aptly titled, Why Mixed with White Isn't White. For this episode of Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman, Sharon tackles race, racism, mixed race identity, and the dangers of assuming white privilege when you look anything but. So hi, Sharon. Thanks for being here on the show, Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman. How are you?
I am so good. Thank you so much for having me.
You wrote an essay that was published last month in Hyphen Magazine entitled, Why Mixed with White Isn't White. So let's start from there. What is the thesis of your essay?
Well, I have written two pieces for Hyphen at this point. And the first one, I built it more around questions. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to get people thinking and talking and maybe arguing or debating or agreeing. Or I just wanted to spark that conversation. So the first one was a lot of like, my son has, who is mixed race, has asked me these questions. I'm not sure what to say to him. I tell him this. Sometimes I don't tell him this. At the end of the day, I'm not sure. Right? And so, that was very well received. But most of the pushback I got from that piece was, why would you tell your son he's Asian, but not white? Those were a couple of the things I had mentioned. So my Hyphen editor and I agreed that that would be a great follow-up piece. So the tone of the second piece was a little more, educational, I think, and a little more firm. And I took a stance and I said, this is why I tell my son that he's Asian and why he's not white. And the basic premise behind that second piece is that my son, who reads and scans as a person of color, is going to move through the world in a certain political way, and that racial categories are not about heritage as much as they are about politics. And so because he looks like an ethnic minority, I'm trying to teach him about what he can expect when he walks out the door, and that telling him he's white does not prepare him for that experience. Even though he has family members who are white, he will never be treated as a white person. And that's why I tell him he's Asian, also a person of color, mixed race, multiracial.
And what has been the response to that?
Meaning like, why would I reveal to him like the darker side of humanity?
yeah. I mean,
I think the Socrates Young has a lot to do with that kind of critique or those kind of comments. This idea that he's innocent or he's naive, and why would I burst his bubble in this way? My answer to that pushback would be, I can't protect him from what other people are going to say. So even if I would like to preserve this world where he presumably doesn't understand much, it doesn't stop him from walking out the door and having experiences from the time he was born, basically, around race. And I would rather have him prepared for the world that really exists than pretend that it doesn't exist and have the world push in upon him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we were in a drugstore, for example, not that long ago, and a woman was very interested about both of us because she could tell we were mixed, asking us a lot of questions. I said, well, we're both mixed race. And, you know, she said right away, he was probably just barely three. She said, there's no pure races anymore. You know, I was like totally blindsided. We're in a drugstore. Like, who would think that someone would say that, right?
Yeah.
In front of his, like, right in front of him, out loud. He's, you know, linguistic at this point, so he knows words. And I was like, wow, okay, that just happened. So those kinds of experiences show me that, lead me to believe that that's one of my responsibilities as a parent, to prepare him for something I don't like. I would rather not, but, you know, I admit that it's there. The other part of that pushback, I think, can sometimes be from, well, he's mixed, he's ethnically ambiguous, so those ideas are not going to apply to him, and race is a fiction, so you're putting it on him. the research doesn't stand behind that. I mean, and the writing and the blogging and everybody out there who's approached the subject knows that being mixed doesn't protect him, and he still walks out the door and has racial experiences. So I think that's the other place that those comments can come from sometimes.
Your mixed race, has that also been your experience where being ambiguous hasn't protected you? I mean, is that how you also grew up, and is that also why you know what your son is going to be experiencing or will experience when he's older?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And my husband is also mixed race. So we have both had very racial experiences, racialized experiences our whole life. Different ones that intersect with different gender roles. So like mine have been more about objectifying my body or sexualizing me because I'm a woman. And my husband's have been more about emasculating him and making him feel powerless or infantile. But we've both had those experiences for sure. And it's always because people look at us and think, oh, you're not white. And I can see, in our case, the Asian, and so I'm going to start applying race-based stereotypes to you because of how I perceive you look. So yes, definitely.
In your essay, you wrote that being half white doesn't actually make you white. Can you expand on that? Because that's really, really interesting. And I think like you've also just alluded to your own personal experience that it didn't save you, it didn't protect you.
There are just some like hallmarks of what being white means, and when you're a white person, how you get to move through the world. And some of those things are like really stark and really strong. Like you don't have to think about race on a day-to-day basis if you don't want to, if you don't feel like it. It doesn't have to be part of your day. Or when you're up for a job, that isn't something that people use to measure you in their evaluation of whether or not you're a good candidate. Or if you go and ask somebody, for the person who's in charge, you're pretty sure it's going to be someone who looks like you. Or if you want to find books or TV shows or newspapers that reflect people like you, you don't have to worry about being able to find those things. That is what being white is. Being mixed white doesn't give you that. So, and that was sort of the point I was trying to make in the article. It's like, if I tell my son he's white, then I'm telling him he can have those things and he can't. He doesn't have very many children's books that show who he is. He doesn't watch any TV shows that reflect mixed-race Asian children. So far, most of the teachers he's had in his life, most of the people who are in charge of things where we live, at banks and grocery stores and in doctor's offices, are not mixed-race people. He isn't having the experience of a white person. So I feel like if I tell him he's white, then I'm deluding him and I'm not preparing him to live in the world he's actually going to live in. So I think that can be really hard for folks who are white in particular and have white family members who are mixed race. They really feel like when I say something like that, I'm taking the child away or taking a relative or family member away from them or destroying a connection that they have. I don't think it has to be like that. I think it's just about acknowledging different realities, and they're painful, but just saying like, yes, you're white, you love your child, but you need to understand your child is not having the same racial experience as you and will not have the same racial experience.
That's really, really interesting. I think really important because many people don't think about that. They really don't. I think that especially in mixed families or children of color who've been adopted by white families, they automatically think that their parents' privilege will automatically be passed down as if it's it's something genetic onto their children.
Right, exactly. Like it's a transfer.
You alluded that race is political, and you framed it around the fact that you are going to teach your son about his white family, his white heritage as well, but that race is a political construct. So that was really interesting, and I think it drove the point home. But can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, how are you going to also teach your son that, yes, he's Asian, but he's got white ancestry?
Right. You're saying something about how white parents think that their privilege will transfer to their children. They sort of assume it's like a heritage, like, and then it doesn't. And I think a really important point to make there is that race is a system. It's a political system that we don't really control. We're part of the system, but it's not It's not an individual day-to-day way of being. And so that's where I think the confusion can be. Like, well, I automatically pass down myself to my child who I birthed or I adopted or whatever. But that's not really how it works, because race is a system. It's about everybody, and it's about a hierarchy that isn't necessarily controlled by us. And so things are imposed upon us within our family units that we may not be able to control or change or maneuver in our lifetime. So I feel like it's incumbent upon me to teach my son about that. And so when I have the race conversation, it's about saying to him, okay, when you start kindergarten in a year and they ask us to start filling out forms where they ask what your race is, we've already talked about this. You know why they're asking us, and you know what our options are and what we could pick and what each choice we make could mean to you and your community. If they ask you what your race is on a form, why are they asking? They're asking because they're trying to track groups of people so they can allocate funding from the top down. And so if you say you are only white, then you are adding your number to the white group of people. If you say you're only Asian, then you're adding your numbers to the Asian group of people. But you may be betraying a sense of self where you feel like both. And, you know, all these complicated conversations that would happen anyways, I'm hoping now that we have had them, have started having them together, and we'll continue having them together.
Where does America's race problem stem from, and why does it seem to not get resolved in a society that's constantly changing and shifting?
Right. Oh, that's such a great question. It's like you could write a whole encyclopedia series trying to answer that one. Well, I think a lot of people know race as we know it in the term of that word, race, became a problem about 400 years ago. So right around the time of slavery beginning in this nation, settlers, colonialism, sort of late 18th century was when race started to become very refined or defined as a science, at the time, science. So from that point until now, we've had this system in place, what we believe to be a way of categorizing people biologically that is totally defective. And it's very hard to uproot something. It's much harder to unlearn something than it is to learn it correctly in the first place. So, you know, in this nation, we're spending the last four centuries trying to, first we were creating this system, right? And divvying people up into privileged and totally disadvantaged positions. And then there was this process of sort of trying to dismantle this belief system and expose it for what it really is and undo all the harm that's been done. That's only been happening with the civil rights movement in the 60s. So that it hasn't been that long. It's only been little over 50 years. Is, as my mentor would say, is not enough time to undo, you know, 350 years of horrible and violent oppression. So we are just beginning. And that might be the answer for why it seems like we haven't come very far. It's a painful process. For my book, when I asked the parents that I interviewed what they thought the state of racism was, the answers were really varied. And there was definitely a sense of, well, we've made some strides, but then there was a lot of skepticism and caution, like, but I don't know if it's actually better. It might be worse. I'm not sure. And so I think that in America, Americans in general are sometimes optimistic, sometimes hopeful, can see the differences between now and, like, say, 200 years ago. Don't realize that we still have a really long way to go. And that, in a way, gives me tremendous hope. Like, at least people can see that. So we have a lot of work to do.
I'm going to quote something that you wrote in your essay, Why Mixed with White Isn't White. Some people are completely unwilling to honor my family's choice to identify as mixed race and Asian because it doesn't align with their own ideas about how we should identify. The right of mixed race person to self-construct and self-define even today endures continual policing from people with their own agendas. So, one, why is it important for mixed race people and Asian Americans to self-define, like exactly what you're doing right now? Like, why is this important?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So I think when it comes to any type of identity, whether it's an expression of your sexuality or your gender preferences or how you want to wear your hair, we start talking about mental wellness and our holistic sense of being and peace and happiness, we need to feel that we have some ownership and agency in our lives. And so the racial identity is just a piece of that. If you start feeling, people of color in particular in the U.S., I'm not going to speak necessarily for other nations, although I know this can be true in other places too, really struggle to claim an identity that they would prefer. And when you start getting that pushback from every direction, from every time you walk out the door, from other people, from strangers, from friends, from family, it can start to encroach upon your well-being and your sense of self and who you would like to be. And so it's just, to me, it's an important piece of that larger puzzle where we want people to live happily and peacefully and fully in their lives. And because race is such a salient part of the way we move through the world, it just, I feel like, needs to be always part of the larger conversation about well-being and being healthy.
So what has been the reaction to your essay since it was published?
I want to lead in by saying one thing that really blew me away about this essay is that I got messages from people across racial lines. So, I am mixed race, Asian white, and my whole family is. But I got messages from people who are mixed race Black, who are mixed race Native, who are mixed race Latina, or people who are parents of children who are mixed. And I found that very profound, that there was some kind of message in there that all people who identified as mixed heritage were connecting with. So that was the main body of feedback I got, was mostly positive, and I was just bracing for trolling. anytime you talk about race these days on the internet, it's just like, the internet is one of the most racially regressive places I've ever seen. I was just like, okay, I'm getting ready for the hate mails, the hate messages, and I really didn't get any. I got a little bit of few mixed race people who said, but yeah, I don't feel Asian either, which is a valid point, and that's like a whole other essay. But these messages in general from all over the world were very similar, like, wow, I love this essay, I really relate to this because of A, B, and C, this is my life. The wording was really similar from people from Canada, from South Africa, from, the U.S., and, even all the way over in Asia. And that tells me something, I think, about global race hierarchy, and just any time a person is trying to cross cultural lines or heritage lines, you can call them race, you can call them culture, you can call them whatever, biological. There is some kind of similar thread of experience there, I think. And then it also told me something about how many people are mixed with white around the world. I was like, oh, wow, there must be a lot of mixed white people out there, which says something about the world's history of colonialism and settlerism. And there was a time where white Europeans were really dominating many, many nations all around the globe. So there was a message in here that really resounded with people. And I think that's really exciting. And I think it could be a great launching point for conversations that we can all be a part of.
Now, you're working on a new book right now that's going to be out next year, and it's looking at multiracial Asian identity in early childhood. Why childhood? What is it about children that you really want to explore more in terms of mixed race Asian identity? And then just a little, and then can you just talk a little bit more about the book and what we should be expecting?
Sure. Okay. So I'll start with talking about the book. I interviewed 68 parents of mixed race Asian children who are under the age of 12. And I asked them questions about race, ethnicity, parenting, racial identity, what kinds of choices they were making on behalf of their children, what they thought their children's racial understandings already were. In the world of racial identity research, it is still pretty commonly believed that we don't form our racial identities until we're about preteen or teen. And that those identities cement then throughout the rest of our lives into early adulthood and then beyond. So there's this, children under 12, typically, and even younger than that, are not capable of understanding race. So that was the first point of concern I had. The first question I had was, is that true? There is a smaller growing body of research that shows that's actually not true. that children are way more savvy than we give them credit for, and they understand race extremely early, as young as 6 months, maybe even earlier. That was my first question. The second one was, once I overlay mixed race identity on top of that, I'm wondering in particular what mixed race children are learning. You know, once we acknowledge, yes, they are learning about race early, what are mixed race children who have sort of a lot of different narratives feeding into their life, in particular learning about themselves? And then I layered on top of that Asian, because in race research, Asian tends to be the most underrepresented, and that ties into stereotypes people have about Asian folk in general being fine and not needing help and not being as important to look at and that sort of thing. So that's where I launched my research from, was those three places. And like I said, I really wanted to look at the earliest and youngest ages I could, because if they're overlooked, but also because we're starting to know that those first years are very, very critical in identity formation and in the formation of self, that the brain is wiring really crucial neural connections at that time. Some people call them the critical learning years. The experience of kids at that time can really determine outcomes for their entire life. So since we know race is so important, since we know racial identity can be a crucial component of well-being and health, I really wanted to look at what is the particular experience of mixed race children who have Asian heritage at that time. Are we missing anything? Is there something we're not doing? Is there something more we could be doing? Is this a point of early intervention for changing our race conversation and moving forward?
Wow. And what have you learned so far then? Like, you know, do you think that changes need to be made in the educational system, for one? You talked about there are very few books that you could really, you know, read to your child, to your son, that would, where he could identify with the characters. Like, where do you think that things should really start in terms of trying to really, you know, really bring out these discussions?
Good question. I have to save a lot for the book. But what I have learned is we do not start talking to our children soon enough about race. The reasons why we don't run very, very deep. They're systemic. They're social. They're pervasive. It's not just because of individual beliefs. Those individual beliefs are rooted in history. And that we try to be ahistorical. We don't know enough about our past. So, you know, you can read the book to read more specific examples and not go into it deeper. And as far as making changes and improving that, the whole last chapter of my book is going to be about those kinds of practices. And I think this is going to be an academic book, but a lot of times in academic works, what I see is like great theory, great research, and at the end, there's like no applicability, like no practice. Like, this is great stuff, but how do I use it in my life, right? So yeah. The whole last chapter of the book is going to be about changes that we can make. And I am going to break it down into three levels. So like a micro level, which would be just you and your family in your home every day, maybe thinking about yourself or the language you use or ways you could introspect and the ways you interact with your kids. Then that would be like a meso level, looking at your neighborhood and your choice of like school or where you live and the impact those things have. And then, evaluating the community, like asking community members to interact with your family differently, or trying to be part of larger things at that level that could affect change. And then I will also look at macro level changes. So those would be large, like national, global systems, like schooling or the production of learning materials. And the point of doing that will be to offer different entry points into change for people, because not everybody wants to go like lobby government to make legislative changes or can or enjoys that. So there will be all kinds of things in there. And I hope that everyone will be able to find something that all together will make a huge difference. And not just for these kids, but I think in the entire, as you called it, race problem. Move it forward. Let's keep going, people.
Yeah. No, that's it's amazing work that you're doing. Do you also find that as a woman of mixed Asian ancestry, that even your own history, your own, you know, Asian history isn't also being discussed? I mean, is that also something that concerns you, that, you know, maybe your son won't be able to find something out about his own Asian American mixed history.
Oh, absolutely, yes. In the last 3 years that I've researched this subject, you know, it's also been for me and my family. That's where I began, really, was like, I had a baby, and I was like, I think I know everything there is to know about being mixed race Asian, and I knew nothing. And I was like, well, I'm going to go get books, and I couldn't find anything. And I was like, well, fine, I'll just research it myself. But in all those years of, like, talking to other parents and reading the research of other scholars, most of what I'm reading is brand new to me. And it blows my mind every day, like, why don't I know this stuff? Why didn't I learn it in high school? Why didn't I learn it in college? Why didn't my parents talk to me about it? And it ranges all the way from, like, right now I'm reading about anti-miscegenation laws in the U.S., like the history of these laws, which is really extensive. Like, it goes on and on and on. And I can't remember even once learning about, like, you know, laws that banned interracial marriages in the U.S. ever in all of my schooling, you know, stuff like that. So I do have concerns about that, us being ahistorical, or like not knowing our history or ignoring it or denying it, like you talked about in Canada, and like what the agenda might be behind something like that, you know, mm-hmm. erasing histories, really, I think, takes away the ability of like people of color to claim themselves. There's a pride you can find when you know your history, even if it's a history of struggle. There's a pride in that. And when we don't have it, I wonder if we just feel empty. I'm going to write some of this in the book, but my hope is that other researchers will launch off and write even more. So there's just more resources and, you know, things people can turn to learn about that stuff.
Wow. That's amazing work. So what are you looking forward to then in the future? Like, you know, you're working on your book right now, and then, you know, what are you going to be working on post-book, or is that something you're thinking about now, or is that too far into the future?
No, I think about that all the time. The first answer is I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the second answer is I'm just very, very passionate about race, family, children, mixed race identity, and mental wellness, mental health. I feel like I'm not going to be able to get away from that. And so this book was sort of the first step. I would really like to continue researching mixed race and mental health issues. And I mean, that is just like barely anybody has done that. So, I mean, there's tons to look at there. But I imagine right after the book comes out, there's going to be a lot of trying to spread the word, because publishing is a pretty hard up industry these days in music and writing. And so my main goal following the book will just really be to try to get it out there. I really made a commitment to go as far as I could in getting these stories to people who could connect with them. So that will be my first goal. And then after that, I will be brainstorming what I want to research next and where there are holes and where people really feel alone and need just each other's stories and support.
Wow. Okay. So one last question. Where do you see America's discussion on race, racism, identity, and mixed race going in the next, you know, 10, 20 years? I know it's really far down into the future, but, you know, there was an article that came out in National Geographic that said, like, you know, this is going to be the face of America. I can't remember what year they were putting it down as, you know, it was like a composite of mixed races. Americans, the way National Geographic imagined it, it wasn't purely one race, and it wasn't really even white. You know, it was very mixed. So where do you think, you know, the discussion of, you know, race, racism, identity, and mixed race is really going to head in the next 10, 20 years?
Oh, I finally get to have this moment where I say, I don't know. I wrote myself a note before this interview, and I was like, Sharon, it is okay to say you don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I look forward to my son teaching me a lot about like what young people are thinking, what's different journey. I have concerns. You know, there has been more and more writing about mixed race, especially since Obama was elected too. That really kind of revved up the conversation, because people are like, is he mixed? Is he black? I don't know. It's so cool. I want to talk about it. So there's been a lot of like blog writing and popular writing and then research. And I think that's all great stuff. Sometimes I love what I read and I think, ooh, this stuff is like hitting the nail on the head. We're going to unearth a lot of stuff, dig up these roots and really talk about it. Sometimes the stuff I read feels very feels very 400 years ago to me, like this colorblind mentality, you know, sort of reverting back to, I don't want to see race. I don't want to talk about it. It's fine. We're all going to be mixed. It'll just sort itself out. So I see both threads, and I hope that we can, I mean, I consider myself a critical mixed race researcher, and I love that word critical, because I think as people become more mixed or identify more as mixed, I should say, I hope that folks can continue being critical about race, and I hope that doesn't mean that they've decided race over and it's not a problem anymore. So that's my hope. It's not an answer. It's not a prediction, but that's my hope.
Well, I think it's a good hope, and, you know, for a really big question, I think you answered it well.
You know, one of my colleagues once said, the closer you get to race, the less you can see anything. And it's so true. It's
yeah.
One of those conversations where, like, the more you talk about it, the more confused you feel. But it's really important conversations to have. So.
Absolutely. Sharon, thank you so much for talking with me this morning.
Oh, such a joy. Thanks for having me.
This is Misrepresent, Behind the Face of Fierce Woman.